I join Carolyn in welcoming everyone to our opening convocation. Welcome all of you to one of the singularly significant ceremonies in our year. And I know you join me in our special pleasure today in having with us St. Paul, Minnesota Chief of Police, John Harrington, and I will offer for John a proper introduction a bit later. I am especially pleased to be here on this stage with those who share the stage with me, in addition to College Chaplain Carolyn Fura Slocum. Thank you for your salutatory. They include Professor of Geology and Dean of the College, Shelby Boardman, and they include Mark Gavoni, Dean of Students. They will both play roles in awarding academic achievement in the course of our ceremony. After that, I will return here to introduce our speaker, but let me remind you that the central reason we are here gathered together is to join in listening to what Chief Harrington has to say. Opening convocation is, as moments ago I once again said, one of our most significant annual rituals. We think at Carleton these gatherings are together, are significant. We think it's important that we begin the new year here, and we think it's important that we begin it together. This last week was a singularly celebratory time for the college because we welcomed to the college the uncommonly talented and diverse class of 2008. A college, thank you. A college is only as good as the people who make up the college. A college is only as good as the staff and faculty and students it attracts every year. We remain a college of the first rank because of the new folks who have joined us this year, and we're awfully pleased you're with us. If last week was that kind of grand occasion for celebration, last month offered another one when, towards the end of a month, on a Friday morning, a magazine called U.S. News and World Report released its annual college rankings. Carleton, that magazine, judged to be the fifth finest liberal arts college in the nation, and that means that Carleton has been in the top 10 in those rankings for 9 out of the last 10 years, and it means we've been in the top 5 the last 4 years in a row. The magazine... The magazine judged that a Carleton education was matched only by 4 relatively obscure colleges located in Massachusetts and Pennsylvania. We, of course, thank them for recognizing what all of you do, but we don't think they've got it quite right. We think the only national ranking that really made sense was that came out just a decade ago when, for the first and only time, U.S. News and World Report ranked American colleges according to their commitment and success in teaching, and in that ranking, Carleton was number 1. Of these rankings, what do we make? In a couple of senses, because I'm going to say in a moment that there is something of significance there, in a couple of sentences, not a whole lot. We're not much given, as I remarked to the class of 2008 last week, we're not much given to ranks and titles around here. We never, let me assure you, make any of the significant decisions we make as we move Carleton forward based upon national rankings. We rather base them on doing everything we can do to offer as fine a liberal arts education as we know how to offer. The sense in which we do make something out of these rankings, the senses are the following. The extent to which they acknowledge that this is, as I like to call it, intellectual curiosity college, the sense in which they recognize that you all, students, have joined us because of your hunger to learn, that is being recognized in our ranking, and that we are grateful for. The fact that it is our staff and faculty who work as hard as they do and successfully as they do to provide the kind of liberal arts education that is second to none is something that these rankings also recognize. If one looks at that magazine and looks at the rankings in detail and casts her eye or his eye to the far right-hand side of all the smaller numbers that make up the rankings, you will see in the final column to the right a column called alumni support and alumni giving. And in that column, alumni support and alumni giving, for the third year in a row, Carleton is number one. That is not because there is anything venal about Carleton. That is not because we think the most important thing in life is money or anything like that. The reason why this is significant is that in that entire array of individual characteristics that make up the total ranking, ask yourself when you look at those, which one of those speaks to alumni satisfaction with their education, and this is the one that does it. So the reason we're so pleased about that number one ranking is that it means that the people who graduate from the college are grateful for what the faculty and staff provided them. Those who give, of course, are the remarkably generous alumni out there. They're also remarkably generous friends and people who work at the college. When you look here in Skinner Chapel about you and see the faculty and staff who are responsible for shaping Carleton as they have, and when you, with me, give gratitude to them, let me remind you that there are throughout the country and throughout the globe tens of thousands of alumni whom you don't see, tens of thousands of alumni who give at a rate unmatched by any college in this country, and it is their giving that's responsible for the kind of financial aid we can offer. It's their giving that's responsible for making it possible for us to hire the faculty and staff that we do. And therefore, I want you to applaud the invisible. I want you to join me in thanking all of those throughout the globe who are not with us today, who give as they do to Carleton. Before moving on to academic achievement and then to our guest speaker's remarks, let me once again with you this year ask where we are in the calendar and what it is right now. With regard to the calendar, we're sort of nowhere. We're at that betwixt and between time when the calendar has not yet concluded summer and not yet begun autumn, and we live in a world calendar that has long seemed markedly odd to me. I do love cold weather, but still, what is it about January 1st that shouts New Year? I think, and I would as the student of the ancient Near East that I am, I think that most ancient Near Eastern cultures had it right, and they had it right in saying that the New Year is right now. If that is a surprise and something that much of the world has had to learn only recently, this is one of those many areas where Carleton students are way ahead of the rest of the world, because if you didn't know that today was New Year's, then why else the bubbles? In the course of the day ahead, I hope you will join me in saying to others what I think we should be saying just now, and that is Happy New Year. We are uncommonly fortunate this afternoon in welcoming to Carleton our opening convocation speaker, John Harrington, who is the Chief of Police of the St. Paul, Minnesota Police Force. Born in Chicago, Chief Harrington proudly admits to owing his lifelong commitment to a life of public service to what he learned from his parents, from his mother, a Cook County social worker, and from his father, a Cook County deputy sheriff. Chief Harrington graduated, though in the class of 1977, early in 1976 from Dartmouth College. There aren't many opening convocation speakers whom I have known since they were the age of most of you out there, but Chief Harrington was a religion major at Dartmouth, and I was then a professor of religion. He and I were just comparing notes. He said he remembered we argued a lot, and I won most of the arguments. I said I remembered we had lots of rich, controversial discussions. and that he won most of those rich and controversial discussions. In addition to graduating from Dartmouth a year early, he holds an MA from the University of St. Thomas and is working right now on his PhD at Hamline University. He has, with these kinds of credentials, been called, and I quote, bookish and an intellectual. When asked if that's been a help or a hindrance in what he now does, his answer is, it's been a big help. In 1977, Chief Harrington became a St. Paul police officer and over the years was promoted to sergeant, lieutenant, commander, and senior commander. He served as a lecturer or trainer on more than 20 law enforcement topics, been an adjunct faculty member at three Twin Cities universities, and played a major role in the development of the School of Law Enforcement at St. Paul's Metropolitan State University. Today, John serves as the chair of the Minnesota Crime Victims Reparation Board, as president of the Minnesota chapter of the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Executives, and as a member of the board of directors of a number of nonprofit organizations. Chief Harrington has led a great many successful community policing and problem-solving efforts in some of St. Paul's most crime-affected neighborhoods, efforts which have dramatically improved the quality of life for not thousands, but tens of thousands of our fellow Minnesotans. He wisely prefers the title of peace officer to that of cop, just as he prizes the phrase community problem solving over community policing, seeing, as he did, I can tell you, years ago, seeing everything he does through the lens of what can and should be done to heal broken communities. The proud father of seven children, John Harrington has fulfilled, as have few anywhere, anytime, the promise of a life of public service, and it is with unusual pride that we welcome to Carleton St. Paul Chief of Police John Mark Harrington.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, faculty, staff, guests, honorees, and students of Carleton College. I want to thank you very much for inviting me here. It is an honor and a privilege to have joined you today. In preparing these remarks, I thought about you students and your achievements. I thought about myself when I was your age. I have frankly wondered, was I ever your age? It is difficult to fathom. I blended in a bit of cop logic and thought about what I was doing when I met your president, then my professor of religion at Dartmouth College. And I try to follow my own advice to students and staff when doing public speaking to keep it short and simple. We live now in an age of uncertainty. One has only to look at the turmoil in Russia, in Italy, in the Near East, and in America, to sense the tenuous nature of our world. It is but 2 days since the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. I think that facing an uncertain future is especially tough for young people. It is complicated by the fact that you are, after all, invincible, indestructible, or at least I am sure for the freshmen in the audience, that is what you have told your parents as you try and hustle them off campus and out the door. 2 days ago, I was memorializing the dead in New York and D.C. and Pennsylvania, and we celebrated the courage of those who became heroes that day. And I offered to my colleagues and I offered to the public the challenge to never forget history, lest we need to repeat itself. For myself, I take one lesson from the days of 9/11, and that lesson is that we cannot afford to take anything for granted. I have as a watchword that's printed on my computer and is the tagline to all my voicemails, the phrase, carpe diem, seize the day. I learned that day, and I learned as many days preceding it, that while things can change in one horrible second, it is how we react to adversity that defines us as a people. I decided long ago and committed myself to act with audacity as my way of dealing with adversity. Now, what is audacity? Audacity is nothing more than the willingness to take risks. Every one of you has taken risks. You risked challenging the status quo in some cases. Some of you may well be the first of your families to attend college. You risked leaving your homes and the safety of being the big fish on your home campus in high school to perhaps being the small fish in a much bigger world. Audacity is sometimes the only thing we have that gets us through trying times. It is chutzpah, it is nerve, and it is guts. As I reflect, there are many stories of audacity from 9/11. EMS personnel, firefighters, cops, police officers, and ordinary citizens who pitched in to save others. My personal favorite is Father Michael Judge. Father Michael was the head chaplain for New York Fire Department. In the midst of the smoke and the rubble and the screams of the dying, he knelt down beside his fellow firemen and the wounded and took off his hat, and he comforted those who could not be comforted and who could not be saved. And he died in that rubble as the building came down on top of him. He took a risk, but it was a risk that served the better good. Now, George Orwell reminds us that we sleep safely in our beds these days because rough men stand ready in the night to inflict violence on those who would harm us. And as much as it was an oddity at Dartmouth College to tell people that, well, yeah, I know I'm going to an Ivy League school, but I'm going to be a cop, I knew from very early on that I was going to be one of those rough men. I am a peace officer. I think that is much better a phrase to describe what I do, and have been for 27 years, and have just taken over the finest police department in the world. At our best, you never know we are out there. Over my career, I've been shot, bludgeoned, and cursed in languages I never knew existed. Throughout all of that trouble, I have maintained a belief in the power of audacity, though. Now, audacity does not mean that I'm a Pollyanna. I'm a strict believer in the Stockdale paradox, which says that you must never confuse the faith that you will prevail in the end, but you can never afford to lose that faith. It is what sustains us in those moments of doubt. But you must have the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they may be. Or as we say at the police department, you hope for the best, but you plan for the worst. Where does audacity come from? In my life, it came as I sat quietly at the feet of my father and his old cop friends, and I listened to them tell war stories. I listened as they told me of the early days on the Chicago and Cook County police forces, when they were only allowed to patrol the black neighborhoods. Yet in their stories of strife and trouble and dangerous situation, as they told me of the doors they had kicked in, the fights they'd been in, the people they had rescued, the lives they had saved, they never, ever were the victims. No matter how much mess society put on their plate, they stood up every day, they brushed it off, and they walked forward. They overcame, they adapted, and they improvised. And because of this, these same men were able to act as role models for me. And later, they were to achieve greatness as chiefs of police in the city of Chicago and other places. Audacity was riding with me in high school when the guidance counselor suggested to me and a bunch of other kids that looked a lot like me that joining the Army, this is basically Vietnam era, or taking up trade was really the only future that we had that we could look forward to. Audacity was stepping up to a water fountain at De La Salle High School, which was predominantly Irish and Catholic and had its mean days, and getting hit by a kid so hard that my teeth rattled because it was the whites' water fountain that I was drinking at. Audacity is getting up off the floor and walking back to that water fountain the next day, counting your chicklets and deciding that they're not running me out of here. And doing it every day, day after day, until eventually the white kids at the school that weren't too happy to see me arrive step back from the water fountain and said, this kid's either crazy or brave, but either way, he has our respect, and we're going to let him pass. Audacity was scoring a nearly perfect score on my college standardized tests. And walking somewhat cockily into that guidance counselor's office with a stack of letters from places that neither I nor my parents nor my friends had ever heard of. Hey, guys, anybody ever heard of some place called Dartmouth? Where in the heck is Hanover? How about Brown? Anybody know anything about Brown? I don't know anything. I mean, I know Chicago State. I don't know Brown. How about Amherst? Anybody know about Amherst? And having to watch the guidance counselor eat those letters piece by piece. Audacity was deciding to attend Dartmouth College and sitting in an auditorium just as you are today, listening to John Kimmeny, the author of Basic and the president of the university, and deciding that based on his call to greatness, that it was okay for me to study Chinese, even though I had never studied any other foreign language. Audacity was looking at Professor Robert Oden and trying to argue theology of the Old Testament and a differing interpretation of a passage in Aramaic. I still believe that I lost that argument. Audacity is the willingness to leave the comfort of your home to begin a quest. A quest that no matter how much you have prepared, and I trust that each and every one of you is well prepared for this quest, its ultimate conclusion is uncertain. You're like Frodo in The Lord of the Rings in some ways. A book that I read many times to keep my sanity while I was at Dartmouth. I hope all of you have read the book, and if not, I expect probably most of you have seen the movie at least. Like Frodo, you are at the beginning of a quest whose ending you cannot even imagine. And it is a difficult quest. After all you want to do in 4 years is to get a good, satisfying, good-paying job. I'm sure your parents echo that request. Achieve your full creative potential and become a success. And, oh, by the way, most of us would like to contribute to the betterment of society somewhere along the line. That's all you have to do. It sounds simple, right? It's a tall order. The question is, how do you get from here to there? How do you succeed in your quest? And the answer to that, I believe, is really very simple. You will succeed and achieve these goals by being courageous, by being honest, and by being audacious. Success is the child of audacity. You must have the courage to be honest, and having the courage to act honestly. You need to answer a few questions for yourself as you travel down that path. What do I do with my life? And where in the grand scheme of things do I fit in? Asking and answering these questions honestly is where courage comes in. As I said, 27, 28 years ago, I sat like you sat. I can remember my parents hovering, unfussingly hovering. We had driven 20 some odd hours to Hanover, New Hampshire. And I couldn't get my mother to either stop crying or to leave. My dad was pretty good with the whole thing. He kept honking the horn downstairs going, Dorothea, it's time to go. We got 28 hours to get back to Chicago. We won't got to go to work. But my mother would not leave. She told me as we finally pried her hard, tired hands off that doorknob in my dorm room, that she was convinced that I was destined for a nice, safe life. God, did that sound awful. It took forever to get her to stop crying and finally leave. And it took only a moment of John Kimmeny's speech to completely wipe out that idea that I was destined for a nice, safe life. I had dreamed of being a cop since I'd listened to those war stories sitting at my father's table. I dreamed of doing great things, of daring deeds. And with Kimmeny's call to greatness, his call that said to me, do not give up your dreams, no matter how safe and prosperous they may seem, It freed me to take whatever courses I wanted, to pursue whatever dreams I wanted. Like Gandalf. You have to decide what to do with the time that's given with you. And a little fireworks and smoke isn't bad either. The most important lesson I learned was that life is more art than artifice. The liberal arts prepared me better for my profession of public service than law enforcement or political science or any of the other sort of professional track courses could have ever done. In the liberal arts, we endeavored to practice listening as an art. It freed us from ourselves, and listening, whether to others, a professor, or in reading in a book, is perhaps the most challenging of the arts. Because if we are truly listening, we have to become aware of our own resistance to what is being said. I didn't like his interpretation of Aramaic at the particular time. But which might be the truth. We must be open and vulnerable in following the insights of another person, sincerely and deeply. And that was the beginning of my quest. I realized at that moment in convocation that if I wasn't being honest with myself, I couldn't be honest with anybody else. I knew from that moment on, and proclaimed it quite gladly, that I was going to be a cop, I was going to be a peace officer from that point on. Many obstacles lay ahead, and luckily I succeeded. I have my dream job. For 27 years, I have put on a uniform and a badge and a gun and gone out to do God's work. And there's not a day that goes by that I do not do this with joy. In part because I know that I am not guaranteed to come home at the end of any of my days. And so to leave the house with anything but joy, with full commitment to live life to the absolute brim, so to grab it and shake it until you get everything that you can out of it, is a waste of life that I refuse to do. One of the things that I gathered out of my classes in religion was an understanding of the power of myth. All the great quest stories, whether it's Lord of the Rings or Return of the Jedi, are really just parables about the journey within. The greatest quest you will take is that interior journey, the one that brings mind and body and spirit together. It is the one that requires the greatest courage and the most audacity. Because if you act with audacity, if you act with honesty and with courage, you will gather the enthusiasm, the passion for your work. And with passion, you will find that seed of greatness. And from greatness, mayhaps you will find fulfillment. You are the lucky ones. The people that I deal with on most days can only dream of the successes that you have had and the opportunities that present themselves to you. I deal with the poor, the undereducated, the immigrants. I dream with people who have given up hope. And you, as I look out on you, I see nothing but greatness and potential. Very few people have the strength to go all the way on this quest. Because of your talent and hard work, you have successfully completed the first part of your quest. And it is now up to the faculty here to test you, because every great quest has tests. To see if you have what it takes to go all the way. In closing, I want to quote my favorite Harvard man. Remember, it is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by the dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory or defeat. It's Teddy Roosevelt, one of the first commissioners of the New York Police Department, and later president of the United States. Let not the uncertainty of your success dissuade you from pursuing your quest, and do not think that you have time. Carpe diem. Gather those rosebuds while ye may. Seize that day and live it and act with audacity. Thank you very much, and good luck to all of you.